What's up, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Our Lives in Medicine. This episode features Dr. Tim DeFrancesco, DPT. Dr. DeFrancesco is the former head strength and conditioning coach for the LA Lakers, and he is a physical therapist who focuses on sports rehabilitation and injury prevention in athletes. He produces huge volumes of high-quality content for athletes and anyone with injuries. These videos are super insightful and have personally helped me improve some old injuries as well. Check out this super fun episode and learn about Dr. DeFrancesco's path through physical therapy. I hope you enjoy. And if you do, please feel free to share the episode with others and like us on Instagram at Our Lives in Medicine. And also, please rate us on Apple iTunes. You have no idea how much your reviews and comments help. And as always, if you need some good beats to study or get some work done or just catch some good vibes, stay tuned to the intro and outro for the lo-fi beats and check the show notes for the artist shoutouts. I hope you have a great one and cheers to the future. Francesco, how's everything going today?
Going great, Everett. Thank you very much.
Oh, I appreciate you being a guest. And I saw that you're in Boston now, correct?
That's right.
How's everything up that way with like COVID and just life in general?
I think like many parts of this country, it is just in sort of a new phase, a new category, a new chapter, a new normal every couple of days, couple of weeks. It feels like there's, you know, some hopefully I think progress happening, and so just trying to just stay flexible, stay patient, not rush anything, and kind of follow the rules. I think those are the important things.
Yeah, absolutely. Be yourself where you can within the confines of not putting others and yourself at risk. So absolutely,
for sure.
I saw you were the former strength and conditioning coach for the Lakers. Did you get out of that before COVID?
I did. Yeah. So I've been away from the Lakers I was the head strength coach with the Lakers for 6 seasons. And then I've been away from the Lakers for 3 years now. So I did not experience anything remotely along these lines during my time with the Lakers.
Now, did you leave the Lakers because of LeBron? Is that what got you scared and pushed you away?
Yeah, I could see I could see that coming and wanted to my time with the Lakers really had a timing wise the management group that I came in with under Mitch Kupchak. And then reported directly to Gary Vitti, who was the head athletic trainer for the Lakers for 32 years and, a very impressive career in his right. They had moved on. And so when Rob Pelinka and Magic came into the mix, I had already sort of begun to look at my vision of what I could do beyond NBA basketball and through my platform now of TD Athletes Edge. And their vision of what they wanted from my role was was a little different than what I wanted would want it to be, and so we agreed to sort of say this is the good time for me to move on to the next steps of what I want to do, and have them, you know, be able to play out what they wanted to from a vision standpoint within their sports medicine staff.
Right, okay, got you. And so before that kind of happened, what was your kind of day to day like? Let's say like 3 years into your time there, what was your day to day like as the head?
I mean, it's so when I was there, I did not have an assistant strength and conditioning coach, and so it was a lot in terms of obviously overseeing 15 players, strength and conditioning programs, and being able to, individually lay those out. I think, really just being, the day-to-day itself, a game day is a good sort of sample day to look at. And so what that would look like is 7, 8 o'clock in the office, you're preparing some pre shoot around. So NBA teams will typically have a shoot around on game day at around 10 or 11 a.m. and just kind of walk through the plays, get a little break, a little sweat, get some shots up, then go home. But players will lift before that. They'll do treatments before that. They'll do rehab stuff before that. So preparing stuff for the day, for the morning sessions. Sometimes players will even come in and get a lift after shoot around. So then that might take you till noon or 1 o'clock, and you have a chance to grab a quick bite to eat and move on from there to to be able to get ready for the game. And in our the proximity of the practice facility to Staples Center, where the games were for us, was not close. And so you haul over to downtown LA, and from the airport, and then kind of get yourself set up for the second wave. And part of my role as well included a lot of oversight of the nutrition. So I would be laying out and get in often in charge of retrieving a lot of the pregame spread items and the food that we would have available for players in the locker room pregame and the players' lounge pregame. Because you have to remember what it looks like for a player during the course of that day is they woke up at 9, 10 o'clock, got there for the shoot around, did a bunch of physical activity in the shoot around. They grabbed a bite to eat at the practice facility after that, and then went home, took a nap, come back. They're going to be hungry when they get to the facility. You prefer they are have in front of them the things that we would, want them to have. And so you try to lay that stuff out and have stuff for them, and then kind of take that hat off, and then prepare for pregame warm-ups and pregame lifting routines and things like that. So depending on a player's minutes that they typically get or their role on the team, that's going to dictate a lot of what they're going to do. Some players come in for a quick kind of dynamic stretch, and they're out to the court to get some pregame shots, and then they're just kind of at their locker mentally preparing. Some players are going to get a very heavy, intense, and brief lift prior to the game. It just depends. And so, and then you get into game time situation. You may be in the back actually in the weight room still during the game and working with a player to who's not playing on some rehab strengthening work, and then after the game, a little bit of a again switch back to the nutrition side. Make sure post game nutrition is what it needs to be for them. And some guys even like to lift after game. So we could be talking 11 o'clock at night by that time. That's all said and done, and maybe you have to hop on a plane to go to Denver for a back to back home and away, or maybe you get to go home and sleep in your own bed, and wake up and do it again tomorrow. But that is a typical day, and then throw in some time zone changes in between that if you're on a road trip. And
Isn't, correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like isn't strength kind of the focus on strength and conditioning, particularly lifting weights, kind of a newer concept in the NBA?
yeah, I mean, I would say so. I recently wrote on how the weight room made MJ the GOAT, and I sort of reference in that the what I estimate as the timeline of when that became a norm instead of a kind of outlier within the NBA training facilities and things like that. I think you always had an athletic trainer from a, injury, acute injury response and rehab stage of things. At some point in there, you incorporated both a strength coach and a physical therapist onto that team. And from the strength and conditioning standpoint, I think I really think that you had a situation where, when MJ became MJ in the 90s, it was heavily reported that he was using weight training in his daily routines and quite aggressively, and working with Tim Grover with that. I think he really, the NBA, is going to follow the things that MJ, that the best player in the league, is doing consistently. And I think that you saw from that point on the slow but sure inclusion of at least initially having many teams in the 90s and a little before that didn't have a separate position as a head strength and conditioning coach in addition to the athletic trainer. If the team did some resistance work or strength and conditioning type work, that was expected that the athletic trainer would be able to cover that and do that sort of as a side note. But then realizing its importance and how much time and expertise that takes, I think you started to see at some point in that period of time the addition of a head strength and conditioning coach to many staffs, and then ultimately a head strength and conditioning coach plus an assistant. And so I think that by the time I left the Lakers, every team in the league had a head and a assistant strength and conditioning coach. And it I think for a period of time there was even some players, I worked with some players that really were sort of very leery of lifting weights aggressively because they thought it would bulk them up and affect their game. Most often the fear is that it's going to affect your shot. And so it always would take a little bit of kind of back and forth and coaxing for people to get off of that myth and I recognize that it would take a bodybuilding style approach to lifting for that to even come close to remotely happening. And by the way, you're probably a if you're a basketball player, you're often a hard gainer type person. You're long, you're lean, it's not easy for a lot of basketball players to gain muscle mass. So I don't think many players have to worry about that.
Right. It's kind of like the misconception among women. Like if I lift, I'll get too big. It's
Yes,
like you
right.
have to go
Yeah.
crazy hard to get even close to that. So yeah,
That's right. That's
that's
right.
funny. Yeah. And you were saying too, that you were kind of in charge of the nutrition aspect as well. Did you have nutrition training? 'Cause I know you're a DPT, but do you also have nutrition training as well?
Yeah, so I am precision. I have a precision nutrition level one certification, the certification that Dr. John Berardi has done a really nice job on creating. And so, it's specifically to be able to understand the how to work with athletes and eating and nutrition and fueling yourself for that and what your performance-based goals are with that. We also worked with Dr. Kate Shanahan, and she helped me a lot in terms of from a sort of consultancy type position with us to understand a lot of the nuances. At the cellular level, even in terms of what fuel sources were guiding them toward and why and how we can optimize that.
Okay, sweet, sweet. And just another question. You obviously you're involved with the team, so there's a lot of aspects, a lot of moving parts. My plan ultimately is to go into sports medicine. I was wondering, did you have any kind of interactions with the sports med department, like the other PTs, things like that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we are a family. We live with each other basically. We travel on the road and we're around each other all the time, so you're in close quarters, and having that kind of continuum of engagement and interaction between strength and conditioning professionals, rehab professionals, athletic trainers, massage therapists, all of that is obviously really key because of the fact that you just need to everybody to be rowing the boat in the same direction, and communication is the only thing that can have that make that happen. So yeah, it's constant back and forths and collaborations with all of those professionals on that overall team.
Cool, that's awesome. Well, maybe one day we'll be on the same team. That'd be pretty cool. We
How about that?
look on this
How about
conversation. Yeah,
that?
that'd be pretty sweet, huh? So,
No doubt.
you left the Lakers, and then now you have your own kind of practice, it sounds like, in Boston. What made you kind of switch, and what is the new kind of focus you have now?
I think for me the switch was being able to the itch from an entrepreneurial standpoint to crack the code of how can you take the baseline and this kind of background of what I had created and turn that into being able to work with the masses and bigger audience and whether it's working in through our on this sort of private side of things versus the team side of things for with within our audience we have anywhere from bas youth athlete at the high school college and beyond level we have people that work a desk job and like to go running a couple times a week and very high performing triathletes, everything in between. And so that was really the driving factor for me is to how do we help more people with a great system of how to get strong the right way.
Awesome. And so now, is it more, you're not working with the team, it sounds like. Now you kind of have your own facility, you're doing your own, making your own workouts for your clients now. Is that kind of what I'm seeing?
Yeah, that's right. And so we operate in a semi-private training model. And so what that means is every person that train works out with us and is a member of our gym, TD Athletes Edge, is going to come in through an initial assessment that can either be done in person or on video. And then from there, the individualized program is created and you're going to train with us in person, either 1, 2, 3, or 4 times per week. And you'll be coached by our team of coaches throughout that. So it's a little different than traditional one-on-one training. It's a little different than traditional group training, but it kind of takes the best of both of those things to really give you a customized experience in a format that is a little bit more sustainable and affordable for both sides, our side and the end user.
And what is kind of your clientele makeup sound? It sounded like maybe you probably have, young athletes. Do you have older patients, clients as well?
Yeah, everything.
Okay.
It's that's part of it that really I cherish and I really enjoy is that it's very fun to be in a facility in a space in a given space where somebody who is in their 60s is doing the same exercise as a 17-year-old kid trying to make their varsity basketball team. And obviously those programs across the board are going to have some big differences, but the fact that there can be, more similarities in those than you would think is always a really neat thing to see in action.
Absolutely. And what are maybe some of the kind of key lifts you think, maybe like the biggest bang for your buck, that would be, looking at someone, you're advising someone brand new who's never really worked out, and you're like, all right, let's get some just core strength up. What would be some of the best moves, in your opinion?
Well, it's funny. I was thinking about this the other day, and you can't discount or from a lower body standpoint, you can't overlook the foundational lower body movements of a squat, a deadlift, a lunge, that kind of thing. But I think answering this question, I would lean toward a push-up. And you know, I think the benefit of being able to do multiple push-ups from the floor is something that all humans should, you know, that's a goal that I think is very, very valuable and beneficial for all humans to have. If you think about it and kind of deconstruct or unpack the push-up itself, you really have something for every part of your body in that. So doing a push-up correctly, we'll start at the head and we'll work our way down. You should have your chin kind of tucked back gently and neck, what I call packed in position of your body versus your head kind of flopping or extended or arched in any way. What that does is right there, you're getting some great value of training some of your postural muscles around your neck and head. And then we kind of work our way down. We get to the shoulders, shoulder, chest, shoulder joint, you know, strengthening and load bearing of our shoulders. We rarely do that as humans, and we obviously hold ourselves up on through our legs when we're standing, but load bearing through our shoulders is a really, really healthy thing for those. So that is a big benefit from a push up, building chest strength, building shoulder strength from a muscular standpoint, but just the shoulder joint health and performance is so by the way of being on a push-up, the load bearing that goes through your forearms, your upper arm bones, those bones getting bearing of weight of your body in a push-up position, those bones are getting stronger when you load them that way. Then if you think about kind of wrist mobility and stretch of the position, the wrist has to be, you know, demonstrate at requisite range of motion to be in a push-up. That's great for your wrist. And then in terms of your core, I mean, if you're doing a push-up the right way, you look like a statue that's moving just up down, and your arms and elbows are just the only thing moving. So it's your core being engaged in that. And next time you try push-up, I mean, think about it. You know, one of the things I use a lot is you should be feeling like, imagine what would happen if somebody gave you a quick karate chop to the stomach as they walked by you. You'd kind of brace yourself a little bit. And if you were paying attention to the next time you're doing a push-up, you know, are you engaged in that way in your core, or are you just kind of hanging out? So your core, you know, that's in that push-up position, your spine essentially is just connecting your hips and your upper body as your upper body does this pressing work, but your lower body has to be, you know, really incorporated in it because of that as it hovers in the air. Glutes and hips, you should think about squeezing, crushing a walnut between your cheeks back there and really maximally tensioning off your glutes as you do that. And that's going to tie your hips into your core and then ultimately into your upper body. So you're getting sort of this max isometric hold tension of your core and your hips, your hip flexors, the front of your thighs are working in a push-up. We forget about that. We think push-ups are just for your chest. Your hip flexors are working in that to hold your hips from your pelvis from just falling to the ground. And then, you know, I would also, you know, I think overlooked big time in a push-up is the benefit that the push-up position gives to the foot and ankle and toes. And so over time, many of us lose mobility through our ankles and our feet and our toes, and that can really affect our gait and kind of how things are impacted above the foot, ankles, and toes. And in a push-up, you're on a stretch, you're extending that big toe into an important range of motion that your toes should always maintain and be exposed to. When you start to lose extension through your big toe, you start to have big problems up the chain, because if you can't extend your big toe when you go to step through your gait, you're going to be stumped, you're going to be stopped, and then something has to change with your knee, with your hip, with your back. And so, you know, I actually did think this through the other day, because you know, it's a question like, what's the best exercise? You know, everybody wants some cool, really sexy, awesome sounding exercise, and
Ha
I think it's the good old-fashioned push-up. I think we cover all our bases there, head to toes. I mean, we just went through it. It's got so much benefit.
Yeah, it's such a simplistic movement. Well, there's not a lot of, once you get the mechanics of it down, there's not a lot of moving parts, unlike a squat and like a deadlift. I mean, once you get the
That's right.
mechanics of good form down, it's pretty easy to teach. I mean, squats, it's hard because engage your core when you go up and down and everything else. And deadlifts, I mean, keep your lats tight, everything else. But a push-up, yeah, just, once you get everything put together. My guess was going to be the clean and jerk, just because there's so many things in it, but that's a hard
Yeah.
one to teach. That's a hard one to teach, though. I mean, that's an advanced move, so.
That's right. I mean, look, the reward for that might be greater, you could argue, but the getting to that point could be a lot it could be a lot different. So it's it's I it's always a risk reward sort of cost analysis that you're doing there. And I think with that one, it's a tricky one. That's a
Yeah.
lot of intensive practice and work to get that big reward that can be there.
Yeah, that's true. So maybe first person asking me, what should I do to get big? I won't send them that way. I'll send them down the push-up route. So
That's right. Show me you can
yeah.
do a push-up. We'll talk about
Yeah.
clean and jerk later.
Yeah, let's get through the big three first, and then we'll worry about the rest. That's funny, yeah.
That's it.
What do you think is, you go to a commercial gym or you go to your own gym even, what do you think is a one of some of the exercises most often performed incorrectly?
I would say, well, I mean, push-up is one of them. It's people think it's so basic that how can I screw this up? But there's keys to doing it right. I think I think chin-ups are often an exercise that are butchered. And probably I think planks are an exercise that people are not really paying attention to the big keys of that. I think a lot of people are hanging out on their planks. Yeah, I can do 2, 3 minutes on a plank, no problem. Well, let me try having you do it with these three keys, and then suddenly 15 seconds becomes hard. So I think those would be, some of the big ones.
Yeah, with the planks, for example, kind of like with the push-up. I mean, a plank is just kind of a setup for a push-up. If your belly's hanging loose, I mean, you're not doing the plank at that point, So,
That's right.
and scap you gotta have your scapulas retracted, and yeah, it's an important. It's like you said, like 2, 3 minutes just hanging out. You're loading your shoulders up, and that's it. So,
Right.
I think I see like the lat pull down a lot of times just
Sure.
really butchered. Like people kind of just
Sure.
flopping back and forth, and yeah, that's tough to watch. But
Right, right.
we'll have to get some education out there, because that's injury prevention 101 right there, just doing it correct. So.
Yeah, no doubt. I think there's it's an important thing. Every exercise I think has probably one to three major keys. And if you're not zeroing into at least one big key on any given exercise, you're just doing the movement. I think you could be missing the value. And I there's always this fine line of, I don't want to ever sort of have so many this big long 10, 11, 12 point checklist that makes people sort of get paralyzed by perfection of the exercise. But if you don't know what the one to three big keys are on an exercise and you're not zeroing in on them, during that exercise, you're probably just not getting enough out of it. Or, you're not, the work you're putting in is not, giving you a chance to get as much reward as you could be getting. And I think that's the real key is, if it can make a huge, huge difference. I posted on my Instagram last night about, before you start asking for a harder exercise in your workout program, maybe try doing everything in your current program with the proper form in those big three key areas. And suddenly you say, oh, this exercise that was, I thought, easy is actually not if I zero in on this.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So I'll have to send, for public awareness, I'll send people to your page and be like, hey, this is how it's done. This is the instruction.
That'll
So
be, yeah, no, I appreciate that. I'm very active there. It's at TD Athlete's Edge, and it's I love when people interact there, constantly posting different notions of thought with through quotes and then also regular video content of different exercise options for different nagging injuries, different performance goals, and you know, really zeroing in on how to get the most out of your exercises or your workout programs.
Maybe we could do like a couple of video, small video series of quick, just key mobility movements for, you know, people in healthcare, like students and people in healthcare. Because I know, like, when I was in med school, my hips got tore up just from sitting around all the time. So maybe we could do something like that in the future.
Let's get it on the books. I'm all in. I love that idea.
That would be sweet. Definitely, actually, we'll talk about that for sure.
Perfect. Stay tuned.
You know, another question I wanted to ask is, if you weren't, let's say you went a completely different route, didn't do DPT, what do you think you'd be doing instead?
So let me qualify that. Do you mean outside of sports medicine or just not the physical therapy track?
You weren't not in physical therapy at all.
At all. Yeah. So, I'll probably be a, I probably would have opened up a restaurant.
Oh, a restaurant?
Yeah.
What
Yeah. Yeah.
cuisine?
So, the good question. I think, you know, for me, I don't know. That's a really good question. I love Thai. I love Mexican. Maybe some sort of a Thai Mexican fusion. You don't hear that very often. You know, who knows? But I think more than that, more than saying nailing myself down to a cuisine, I probably it's to me, you know, cooking is the great part about cooking is taking fresh, local, in season ingredients and coming up with a dish that either kind of takes a traditional classic to a different level or puts a twist on it or comes up with something just what the ingredients provide us with and what comes out on the palate. I enjoy cooking a lot. My mom ran a catering business. My dad was a chef at Dartmouth College growing up. So it would be like Michael Jordan's kids not appreciating basketball. So yeah, probably that's what I would have done.
That's pretty cool. That's awesome. You should. It sounds like you kind of, you're a chef for good food, but you also like to be a consumer. You'll have to come check out Asheville, North Carolina, sometime, and the food here is fantastic. So,
Man, it's on my list. We should get something on the books. We'll get a little workshop on the books. We'll help educate some folks and get some good food. You can you can you joking aside, you can sign me up for that. I'm down for setting something like that up.
that sounds like a plan. Absolutely. Yeah, we'll definitely. I'll message you after the interview. We'll figure something out. That'd be pretty sweet.
Let's get it going.
So, another question I like to ask everyone, and I hear your little baby in the background, which is adorable, by the way. So, one of the
That's
questions,
Olivia. That's
it's
Olivia and
Olivia.
Avery back there.
Okay, sweet. That's awesome. One of the questions I like to ask everyone is, what did you get in trouble for as a kid?
Oh boy. Let me think here. Let me think. From I man. Oh man. Oh man. What is I'm trying to think. What did I get in trouble for? Let's see. One time, I used Scotch tape and took these plastic bugs that my brother and I had for as you know like flies and caterpillars and centipedes and everything and taped them to the inside of his underwear and so I got in trouble for that one for sure.
Yeah, I bet. That's a big one. You're gonna get caught for
So
sure, and you're gonna get in trouble for that one.
no doubt, no doubt, yeah.
That's funny. I was having dinner at my dad recently, and I was telling him, he never knew this story, but when I was in middle school, myself and like four or five other guys, what we did, we had this one teacher who wouldn't let us eat in class. And so we were like, well, that's annoying. So what we did, instead of not eating in class, we just started sneaking food into his class and putting it into this drawer in the back of his room. And so for like weeks, like four or five of us were just dumping food into this drawer, and the
Ha ha ha!
the teacher's room started to reek, and he's like, "What is going on? There's no food allowed in here." And he finally found the drawer, and he was so mad.
Oh my
He
gosh.
was so mad. He just like he was determined to find out who did it, and we all kept, kept tight and never ratted on ourselves. So unfortunately, I feel bad now, but because he was so upset. But
Right.
we got away with that one, luckily. But that was
Man,
that's just like, stupid
classic.
boy stuff.
That's it. That's it. That's it.
I told my
Harmless,
girlfriend that
harmless.
story, and she's just like, "What is wrong with you? Why would you want to have a gross why would you want to have a gross food drawer? I don't understand." But for us, it was the best thing we could have done. It was entertainment for weeks.
Sounded great at the time. Sounded great at the
Exactly.
time.
My girlfriend's a
That's
great idea.
hilarious.
So yeah. So
That's it.
another question is, if you could have anyone narrate your life, who would it be?
Man.
Some thinkers this morning, huh?
Oh yeah, these are good. I'll go with I think Matthew McConaughey could do a nice job there.
Matthew McConaughey would be a good one, actually. That's a smooth voice. That's a smooth one.
He could add some real drama to a pretty basic life.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like you would be pretty pleased with that one. That's a good one, actually.
Yeah, I'll take that. I'll take that.
I ask this one a lot too, and I try to think of different people each time, but I think one I would go with now for sure is Bruce Lee. I would love to have him narrate my
Oh,
voice. That'd be
nice.
pretty sweet. Like
That's yeah,
every time I'm
that.
messing up, he's like, "You got to be more like water, you know?"
Yeah,
And
exactly.
I'm like, "Man, I got to get my stuff together. Bruce is not approved, not approved, you know?" Yeah, I mean, I know we're coming up on our time. I have four questions I like to ask at the end of every interview. We can ask those and get you out of here maybe a little bit early, actually, if that's okay with you.
That works. That works.
All right, cool. So the first question is, has practicing physical therapy been what you expected?
So I think I recognize that the traditional practice of physical therapy in, let's say, an outpatient clinic in the setting that I was in when I left school was not what I expected and or wanted. So I then transitioned to sort of taking, really going and understanding the strength and conditioning space at a high level, and then applying my background as a physical therapist to that. I think now I've even begun to shift back toward, saying, okay, wearing a little bit more of that physical therapy hat, not necessarily from a manual therapy standpoint. I really am not a physical therapist that you're going to see doing manual therapy at this stage of my career. I feel much more comfortable and feel like the hammer that you can hold from a therapeutic exercise and then transitioning and converting and translating that into strength and conditioning. To me, it's all just one thing, but everybody wants to sort of label stuff. So, I've just tried to, in my use of my background as a physical therapist, erase the differences between a strength coach and a physical therapist and just say, I think we're just all here to get people strong the right way and help them stay strong and healthy. And so, the therapy exercise portion of that is, and then strength, higher level strength work is the space that I prefer to sort of use from that.
Okay, got you, absolutely. So it's definitely a different path than you expected, but it's something you definitely wanted, so that's good.
It's definitely something that I would be kicking myself or not realize how much I had missed had I not gone down that path.
Absolutely. And it's funny you say that, because that's kind of what I want to get into as well. That's, the whole sport med route and dealing with, I want to focus kind of on like injury recovery protocols. So maybe we can be more aggressive on certain injury protocols, or also just rehab protocols in general. I want to look at concussions, and then kind of just looking at just fitness, like the science of recovery, the science of, gaining as well. So it's like you said, it's a cool field, and it's just, there's so much potential. There's, you could pick one thing and never know everything about it. So I love it. So the next question is, in your opinion, what are keys to success in physical therapy?
Be enjoyable to be around, have an open mind, and be ready for evidence and research and information from textbooks to change with new evidence, new information as it's how research works. We get more of it as we go. And don't don't put your flag down in one camp of treatment approach or of thought in too early or really ever. I think, be again, that's just sort of be open-minded to what is out there to change, and that it's okay that with the information you had at one point early in your career, that you make adjustments and you say, if I were now knowing what I know, I wouldn't choose those treatment strategies, or I would write my rehab programs differently. I mean, of course you would, but I think some people get stuck in the well, I mean, I've been saying this for 10 years, I can't change now type of idea, even though there's new information to suggest that changing is important for the end user. But I think just that first one is go, be enjoyable to be around, and that goes for the people, the staff you work with, and the patients you work with. If you have an ability to connect with people and be enjoyable to be around in that process, it will take you a long way.
Yeah, that's not even just for PT, that's healthcare in general, it sounds like. So absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah,
Yeah.
exactly.
And so the next question is, you've been in practice for a bit, you've gone through everything. What would be your advice to, current DPT students or recent graduates or even, undergrads who are pre-PT?
I think just sort of decide, a lot of people feel like, okay, I mean, it's a dream for many clinicians of within sports medicine umbrella to say, I want to work with a pro sports team, and that's a incredible goal. I wouldn't deter you from that. I think just decide though. I mean, it's are you more of the type that wants to be in that team setting, or are you more of the type that wants to be, on the entrepreneurial side of things? Or maybe you want to be a clinician that kind of reports to work and can do your job at a really high level and go home. So, you're not going to want to open your own business, and you're not going to want to do a pro sports team, because in neither of those environments do you just sort of show up 9 to 5 and go home. So, I think figure out sort of what direction you want to go with it, and over time develop your training philosophy. A lot of that out of the gate starts with doing in the early parts of your career a lot more observation, learning, listening, and a lot less along the lines of trying to just walk into the party and start shouting your name and saying I'm here.
Right.
And so I think that I think that's really, really, really key in terms of just how you approach the early stage of your career.
Absolutely. That's good to know for me as well, because I'm literally just starting out. So,
Yeah.
I start residency on Monday. So I'm like, all right, cool. Good to know.
Yeah.
Let's see. The last question is, if you woke up tomorrow and you were 10 years old and you had to go through everything again to get to where you are now, would you do it all over again?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Good. Good. That's good because I haven't got a no yet. So I was like, uh-oh, am I going to get a no? I haven't had a no yet. So. I was like waiting. I was like, here we go. Plus if you did anything different, you wouldn't end up here on the podcast, So,
That's what my train of thought took me to. I couldn't,
you can't imagine anything else, It's like
No.
no, that's funny. So yeah, I'm glad, because it's like you said, it's a life choice and it's some people make unfortunately may go down the wrong path even within the right field. So you definitely got what you think, what I think it sounds like for you is perfect. So that's great. And yeah, that's
No
great. So
doubt.
that's all I had for you. Did you have anything you wanted to, anything else you wanted to share or anything you wanted to ask me?
Well, I think, this was really enjoyable. I appreciate the opportunity to come on and talk about some great topics and answer some great questions. I would encourage any listeners to come check out what we're doing at TD Athletes Edge. You can go to www.tdathletesedge.com. We have a large suite of online and virtual training services, custom programming, do it yourself, workout guides, things like that of that nature, and are constantly putting in into through our website, through our blog, and through our team's Instagram or social media channels, my Instagram channel of at TD Athletes Edge. To come find us on there and come check it out, and we're here to help, and we're here to hear from you. So definitely come check us out there. If there's any basketball players listening, please check out Basketball Strong, 12-week Basketball Strong strength conditioning program. And that's a great do-it-yourself guide that can take you 12 weeks into preparing for the court, as hopefully many of us are getting ready to get back to a court situation soon, and this is a great way to prepare for that. So you can either just direct message me on Instagram or reach out via our website, and it's very straightforward on how to do that.
Awesome. Well, that sounds like a great plan, and I enjoyed your page a lot, actually. There's a lot of good information on there, a lot of the good things to learn. So, absolutely. Anyone interested in getting better, physically, definitely check out the page. And yeah, Dr. DeFrancesco, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Excellent. Thanks, Everett. This was great.
I'm gonna shoot you a message after this, and we'll talk about the video, the mobility for healthcare workers, and also
Yes.
the Asheville trip for sure. So I'll have to get that set
Let's
up.
start some thoughts on that. I'm down to explore that. That would be a lot of fun.
Awesome.
Thanks, man. Keep up the good work. Good luck at the start of residency there.
All right. Thank you, sir. Have a good one. All right. That was Dr. Tim DeFrancesco, DPT. Thank you so much for listening. Thanks for tuning in, as always. And to those in the game and those on their way up, keep grinding and don't let anyone take your dream away from you.